And welcome to Hagmann. It is the Hagmann Report for today. It is Tuesday, September 30th, last day of September. So can you believe, of course, tomorrow is October 1, some parts of the world listening to this. Right now, it's October 1st. I guess the summer has gone quickly. And now, I don't know where any of you live necessarily, where you're watching this. I know we've got a lot of, it's a diverse audience. So you could be listening to this in the UK or in Australia or New Zealand or Canada or US, wherever. But I know the summer has kind of arrived here where I live. The weather's just been really strange. I just wanted to kind of make note of that. A lot of things are strange. Have a great show lined up for you today. Now, for the first hour, I just want to get into a few things that I think are important that we have to address. And then the second hour, maybe I'm going to try to see if we can bump that up to like the last 90 or hour and 15 or so, whenever Sam Andrews can. He's done a lot of research, investigation, and has a lot of contacts. And he's going to do a deep dive from a very from a very factual, court-ready investigative report on the murder, the assassination of Charlie Kirk. I kind of know the bottom line. I got to tell you, the bottom line is not what we've been told, obviously. No one believes. I don't think anyone really believes what we've been told with respect to the murder of Charlie Kirk. And, you know, I have to say this. I was against and kind of am against the theorizing based on videos and photographs from the internet. Now, I had to rethink that a little bit. I was talking with a detective. I've worked with this detective actually for the last 15 years, maybe a little bit longer. And for the last several years, he has been involved in cold case homicides. Okay. And obviously, we don't have the benefit of the original crime scene. We don't. So he reminded me of how we approach, or using me as a consultant for example, for blood spatter analysis, specifically for that. In some of the most horrendous, cold case homicides that involve, horrendous bloodshed. We've gone over. And he said, you know, Doug, what do we use? We don't have the benefit of the fresh crime scene. We use, obviously, contemporaneous, at that time, notes, as well as photographs of the crime scene. And in the later cold case, we also have a video. Okay, you made a point. Point well taken. So I'm okay as long as the videos and photographs are authentic or authenticated, depending on what what Sam's going to bring. So with that, because, and as an example, you recall, and I think I showed this, I'm not sure what show and when, but as an example of potential problems with we still okay? I see that there's a black spot. I shouldn't worry about that. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. And Sam, I'll give you more time. So, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of discussion on this. But anyway, the reason I was talking about authenticated, or at least videos that we can reasonably suspect are authenticated. You recall that I played a video of the charges being read to Tyler Robinson, the alleged shooter of Charlie Kirk, right? And the Scott Ross was a body, or is a body language expert, one of the best in the business, from the behavioral panel, plus in his own right, one of the fab, I mean, you can't get any better than Scott Ross or Chase Hughes or any one of the behavioral panel specialists. And they do have colleagues, like Behavioral Arts is a colleague. And they call that man Spidey, but okay. But so Scott Rouse did the analysis of the reading of the charges. And his colleague from Behavioral Arts noticed that the video that was offered, do you remember this, folks, by ABC News was off. The video or the video and audio track did not match. All we saw, of course, was a very stoic, essentially unresponsive suspect, Tyler Robinson, being read the charges. And he nodded at a given time. Well, the Behavioral Arts channel found that the video and audio tracks were not lined up because the local channel in Utah, I believe it was Utah, that aired the original footage from the reading of the charges by the judge was different from ABC. And in that, although Robinson did not really say anything, the head gesture, the nodding in the affirmative, was at a different point. In one of the segments, he nodded to the judge stating that this was a political assassination. Very important point. And in the other TV footage, he nodded when the judge said that the reading of the charges are concluded. Whole different context. So that's why we have to be careful. That's all I'm saying. It's a very long way of saying, but I believe important way of saying, we have to be careful. So if we have, for example, crime scene photographs, because the detective that I consult with, the cold case homicide detective for the Credentialed Police Department, obviously those photographs are authentic and authenticated. Despite their age. So in the reports, obviously, the same thing. So we have to be very careful because there's a lot of deep fakes out there on the internet. You know that. You know that a whole lot better than I do. So it's just, again, it's a way of saying, look, we have to be very, very careful as to what is going on. But then let's, before Sam comes on, let's pull back for a second. If this didn't happen the way they said it happened. And it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what I believe. The facts matter. Not opinions, but facts. I cannot offer any facts because I don't have access to anything that is legitimate. I have been told things are legitimate. I have sources who said, oh, that didn't happen that way. But can I verify? I would be doing a disservice. Okay. So But so that's why I want to look at the bigger part of this, because a lot's happened since then. That was only 20 days ago, and a lot's happened. You had a shooting at an LDS church, right? And Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Apparently, there's a distinction. Okay, but the fact of the matter is, it happened in a place of worship. A Christian place of worship. Now, non-Muslim place of worship, okay? You had that. Then there were several other things. There was allegedly a bomb that was detonated at another Utah State University earlier today. Reportedly where TPUSA event was going to take place. And this bomb was, and you can find this on social media. I don't have to show you. I mean, what all you hear is, or all you see is the side of a building, and you hear someone yell fire in the hole, and bang, a bomb blows up. So we're seeing, at least in the bigger picture, by my perspective, we're ramping. Things are being ramped up. Now, does that mean things did not happen? No, of course they happened. But how one will exploit those things and use those for varying agendas, we have to pay attention to. I'm going to play you video too. This is kind of the basis, I think. I've got a couple of videos here I think are extremely important. Eric Tech is going to be video two, then video. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go to just a brief video. This is John Solomon. If you think back to how we got here, there was this incremental, don't even play video one, never mind. There's been an incremental rise. You had Obama come in, and I don't know if this will be explained or not. You had Obama come in and really increase the racial divide. You had numerous other things happen with previous administrations. But Obama really was the one to increase the racial divide. He was also the one to be very soft. Despite what you hear, you have to look at the, not just the policies, but the action of his 8 years being very soft on illegals in this country. Also, during that 8-year period, we saw the largest influx of the black robed tyranny individuals than ever. And of course, Obama's third term through Biden and company, that just accelerated. And of course, the floodgates were opened on the southern border. So all of this is setting us up for an event here domestically, or a series of events domestically. Now, I'm going to leave the war stuff, the World War III, to others, because again, I'm very concerned about what's going on here in America. I'm kind of a believer in the sense of staying in one's lane, you know, speaking with authority on what you know about. Because criminal investigative work is my lane, not foreign policy. I can comment on that. It's not worth a damn, but I can comment on it. But the criminal part of things going on in the U.S., which I believe are the building blocks to the Balkanization of our country. And what also what Obama started and continued right through, again, his third term with the vegetable Biden and company, the communists there. You've got this massive attack on faith. So what we're seeing today is all of that unfolding. Now, here's video two in the show notes. And by the way, folks, you can go to HagmanPI.com. Once the show is up, all the show notes will be, you have to click on the title and all the show notes will be listed right there. And I thank you so much for your patience. I'll tell you what, we've been just, it's just been hell on wheels here in terms of attacks and problems. And, it's crazy. But thank you for your patience and thank you for your understanding as we work through this. So here's cut two. The attacks on faith are skyrocketing. This was just aired today, I believe it was, or I'm not sure when, on Real America's Voice. I believe it was today. And watch this and listen to this. This is pretty important here. Here it is. Cut two.
People are being targeted, whether it's school children at mass in Minnesota, Mormons at a Sunday service in Michigan, and this is becoming far too common. I mean, the hatred of people going to church, any church it seems, is really off the charts. Why? What's going on?
Well, it is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but also Catholic churches and Jewish congregations. The number of incidents of violence against Jewish people has skyrocketed just within the last 2 years. So this is an attack on faith. I was visiting yesterday for my podcast with Aaron Wren, who's a journalist. And he said, look, from the 1960s to the 1990s, people had a positive view of faith. Then from the 1990s to the 2014, he said they had a neutral view of faith. From that point forward, there has been a negative view of faith. So people of faith are viewed as the reinforcing the patriarchy. They are now viewed as evil by a lot of people who are very disturbed, people whose lives revolve around social media and the internet. And, I don't know. You could look at social media. We all recognize that social media outlets monetize anger. They feed you things that they think will distress you. And there are just a handful of people in this country who are sick and demented and violent and will do extreme things to hurt people just because of their faith.
Well, and look, how many times can you call, you or me a Nazi or a fascist or a white supremacist or a white nationalist? Here's the thing, Jeff. I'm white. I'm a Christian. And I believe in America. Does that make me dangerous in 2025? Does that make me a white nationalist? Am I the problem, Jeff? Because I don't see it. But that's what they paint us with, this broad brush. And I've talked about it here for a while. I would not be surprised if I woke up tomorrow morning and some poor schlub gets gunned down because he's wearing a red hat, nothing more. Just some ordinary guy walking on the street and gets gunned down because he's been called a Nazi and a fascist and a Trump supporter, and he gets murdered for it. Your thoughts?
Well, I was out in Western Colorado here just a few days ago and visiting with some guys. And, the conservative versus liberal labels don't even apply when it comes to violence of this kind. There are people out there whose whole worldview revolves around a conspiracy. And most people today do believe, Steve, you're the evil guy. I'm the evil guy. We're white. We're Christian. We're doing fine financially. All of those kinds of things make us the enemy. And for people who have a victim mindset, they believe that every problem they have in their lives must come from outside of themselves. So they have to figure out who is to blame, and they eliminate them in the same way that if someone attacked you, you would defend yourself. And if that person died, that would be considered justifiable because you were under attack.
You can cut that. Folks, you can watch the entire clip. In fact, you can watch the entire episode. It's well worth your time. And I see this more often today. Wherever I go, there are people, especially the younger people, they've got their heads buried, and it's always on social media, whether it's TikTok social media, I don't even know if that, but it's always, their heads are all, they're watching this, and the programming that is, this is really, at least in my researched opinion, is done by the black hats in the various intelligence agencies. They're dropping just these incendiary videos. Now, is it happening? Absolutely, it's happening. But they take the worst of the worst and they post it, and it pisses you off. And it's designed to do that. Now, am I saying we shouldn't do anything about it? No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying be aware. In addition to it being reality, and I have to kind of pause there, let me ask you, the audience, to think. Within the last, and I'll look to the chat on this. Love some participation in that, in this. And here's my question. I'll give it, in the last week, has anyone in the chat witnessed with their own eyes any event such as you would see on TikTok or tic-tac-toe, whatever platform, right? That would rise to the level of absurdity that we've seen. Again, I'm about 10 seconds behind on the chat, so but I'm interested to find out. I'm just curious. Yeah, a simple yes or no would work. And I see people, and by the way, a couple of comments. Again, I'm behind on the chat, but Louis, I agree with you. Divide and conquer at full stage. Yes. And I think there is a division that will be necessary, but perhaps not in the manner in which the black hats, the bad guys, intended. And I also agree with you on a previous statement or statement that World War III and like a civil war are concurrent. They're running concurrent because we're in both right now. So yes, I agree with you. So, okay. So the answer is, from what I can see here, generally no, you folks have not seen any of the insanity in real life that you see on the various social media platforms. That's good to know because I haven't either. Probably wouldn't be sitting here right now. I'd probably be a county jail or under it. Because I'm not going to put up with that crap. Not even close. I'm done with that. I'm over it. It's gone. Thank you for responding, by the way. Yeah, I don't like the only TikTok stuff I see is if it appears on X or whatever. I can't even sign into Facebook. YouTube is, well, you get the idea, right? I'm banned everywhere. So, okay. So I'm getting to my point here, and I believe Sam is going to really drive this home because I think all of this is being ratcheted up. When you look at Portland, you look at Chicago, you look at what President Trump is doing. Do I agree with President Trump? Abso-friggin-lutely. You've got to protect the federal buildings. You've got to protect the federal police force. If you're not going to get backed up, for example, in Portland, by the Portland police, which have pretty much been crash test dummies out there, compliments of the mayor, and backed by the governor, that twit. Maybe that I should be an A, but anyway. You've got to do something to enforce law and order. And the question, of course, the litmus test for that is it constitutional? And yes, it is. And folks, you can look up for yourself how many times the National Guard was federalized for this purpose. And believe it or not, it's not uncommon, all right, by both the Democrats and Republicans. Just saying. All right, so there's that. But there's something more here. Because, again, staying in my lane, when I look at a cold case homicide, and again, this is really the only level method of comparison I'm qualified to compare or just to discuss. There is a course of action leading up to the homicide. And oftentimes, it's very identifiable. Sometimes it's a little bit more elusive. But then in retrospect, you can identify it. So there have been various things that have happened. I'll give you one example, and I'm going to bring Sam on a little bit early. Sam, give me a thumbs up if you can come on a little bit early. Okay, good. Hang loose just for a second. So one of the run-ups, and this answers, for me, this answers a lot of questions. This verified something I already knew. And folks, I don't know if you know this. Now, John Solomon reported on this, and you can find this now pretty widely reported on social media. The TSA was weaponized by the Biden administration. Well, okay, we knew that, but to what extent? Let's go to cut one. This is very, very brief. We'll cut it off halfway through. You'll get the idea. John Solomon mentioning this, and you can see this on through just the news website, a little bit more in depth on this, but this does answer some things. And think about, don't just watch us and listen about, give it some thought, because this is one of those pieces of that larger tapestry that was implemented by Biden, well, or Obama, essentially the communists. The demonic communist Islamic married at the hip tranny. And I'll say it again. I long for the days when I referred to a tranny as the under, you know, being located in the undercarriage of a 71 Camaro. Okay. I really do. But think about the all the pieces of what is we are being led to believe makes America right now, which is entirely false. Because when you take all of these pieces, like the trans, what do you call them? The freaks. I don't know, freak category number one, number two, all of the freak categories together, they're a very small percentage, extremely small. But those are the ones that are getting the funding from the federal government. Those are the ones that are getting the support through NGOs, the Soros, the cannon fodder. You get the idea, right? Well, here's just a taste with respect to the TSA, how they, not just how the Obama / Biden / communist Islamic terrorist bastards, how they all came together. Yeah, I lost the first... this Christian station decided not to continue broadcasting my show because apparently, well, I suppose I could take some responsibility for it because of my descriptions and my lack of filter anymore, but who cares? Here's cut one, and think of this as part of the tapestry, okay? Here, go ahead. Just play like a right. You can quit it when John talks about, you know, catching more for on Just the News for tomorrow. Go ahead.
We have spent the last few years chronicling the weaponization of government. We've shown it happened at the CIA and the FBI. We've seen it clearly showed it happened at the IRS. Today, we're able to show that it happened at the TSA. That's right, the Transportation Security Agency. New information made public today by the Homeland Security Department confirms that during the Biden years, the TSA was weaponized to go after those who didn't agree with President Biden on things like politics or COVID masks. Yes, people were being targeted by the Open Skies program to keep them off planes, even after the CDC said you didn't need to wear masks in public settings anymore. Well, the TSA was still punishing those who didn't like masks. All the details over at justthenews.com.
Okay, so, again, that's just one aspect of a larger tapestry of the pitting the number one, censoring the truth, but also pitting one segment of society against another. You have to look at this not with blinders, but with this larger panoramic lens, if you will. So there's that. And also in the show notes, there is a video, which is actually going to be video 8. Mark that right now. Video 8. You can watch on your own. This is video 3. I'm not going to play this. I'll tell you what, Sam, just hang on one second. Go ahead and play video 3 because I think this is extremely important and will segue nicely into what Sam's got to say. Here's cut 3. In my bottom line up front for Sam is Civil War in America? ? And the answer is yes, obviously, yes. It has to be. And I'll tell you why briefly and then bring Sam on. Here's a bit, cut 3.
It's the fact that it's feeling more and more like a civil war in America. And of course, the situation in Portland is a flashpoint. It feels like Fort Sumter to me. You even have a Portland City Council member, very reminiscent of the Confederacy type stuff, telling U.S. troops and National Guardsmen and women not to report for duty if they're sent or deployed to Portland. I mean, that is a secessionist comment. That is an insurrectionist comment, and I'm sure he has a lot of support among his fellow politicians there. It's a violent situation, and there seems to be absolutely no remorse. Forget about the people perpetrating the violence, Lael, but the politicians, the governor of Oregon, the mayor of Portland, this city councilman, they seem to be all in favor of violence against the federal government. Talk me off the cliff, Lael.
Well, look, I gladly will, because I think while the description is correct, there's one big difference. The Civil War, of course, was fought between Americans who held very different beliefs. This, as we could tell by an arrest of a gentleman who tried to attack an ICE facility and other federal troops yesterday with a laser pointer, and of course was found out to be an illegal alien. This is not a war between Americans. This is a conflict between Americans who want law and order restored and radical Democrats who want to import armies of illegal migrants to fight on behalf of their lunatic ideas. That's a very, very different order of magnitude. I think an overwhelming majority of Americans understand exactly what the freak is wrong with Portland and why we need President Trump to step right in just as he did in D.C.
Okay, you can cut it right there. Drop it. He also mentioned in that clip, they also go on to mention about what's causing all of this in drawing comparisons. The best comparison I heard, and for those interested in really understanding where we're at, I would suggest this. Go to HagmanPI.com, not now, after the show is up, and click on the show notes and watch the documentaries I put in there about the Lebanese Civil War. If you go back to 1975, right through 85, 86, 87, you'll see pretty much exactly what's happening in America. All right. That's a great analysis or analogy, I should say, to what is taking place in America. So all of these bits. Now, all of that said, here we are 20 days hence from the horrific, horrific murder. Homicide, assassination of Charlie Kirk. And frankly, look, I'm not going to overstate my relationship with him, but I've met him. But just, man, I got to tell you what, I've talked to him, not a malicious bone in his body. It hurts my heart. It hurts my heart. And what hurts my heart too is not getting the truth about what happened and having the people in office in positions of power not revealing the truth when they should know it. So, out of all the people I know, and I mean this from the heart, out of all of the people I know, there's one person I trust to give me the truth, an analysis. For example, again, using my example, cold case homicide detective in a high position in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania comes to me for analysis on blood spatter analysis. Okay. Probably because I'm inexpensive. In other words, I should say I don't charge. He'll buy me a cup of coffee and bring it to my office. But beyond that, that's what I, however, we'll spend a couple of hours on two photographs. He trusts me. I can trust him. He knows what I know, the depth of my knowledge. He also knows my limitations. But having said that, of all the people I would go to for an analysis, Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA. Folks, the link to Sam Andrews' website, and you can even talk to him. But I would do suggest you get ready. You get ready. You train. If you haven't trained with a firearm, that's the place to go. I don't care if you got to drive 15 hours, 20. I don't care. Do whatever it takes. But that man knows his stuff. And if you've already been down that road and you're ready to go, let him fix you up with a weapon that you'll be comfortable in using and reliable too. I don't get paid to say this. And at least if I do, Sam's been pretty delinquent on his payments. But I believe that much in Sam Andrews. Some people say, you know what, he's just a little bit kind of brash and outspoken. Well, yeah, I hope so. But with that, Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA. Sam, thanks for joining me. And thanks. And by the way, thanks for putting up with my intro monologue. Go ahead, sir. How you doing?
The intro was insightful.
Insightful or inciting. I don't know.
Well, you know, we don't have to do any inciting. There's plenty of that going on right now.
Yeah, there is.
What we're really seeing right now is the five phases of an insurgency playing out in the homeland. And you can do some research on that. I don't want to go over all the phases. It's not important. What is important is that we are at the very end of the fourth phase of insurgency. And one of the hallmarks of the fourth phase of an insurgency is that you see people rising up violently opposing the elements of the state. And we see that with ICE. We see that in other areas with law enforcement. And the people that are trying to create an insurgency and be successful in an insurgency, they know throughout history that once you can get a country to the fourth phase, there's almost no example of it stopping before the fifth phase, which, by the way, historically lends a lot of credence to the fact that you just stated we're likely headed for a civil war. Because once you see populace, whether they're imported or paid, rise up against the security elements of the state, which is a fourth phase attribute. In almost every case, you go headlong into the fifth phase, which is a kinetic civil war. And that's the bad news, you know, is that we're at the end of the fourth phase. I'm not sure it can be stopped. If it can be stopped, it'll be the first time in history that it has been stopped. I would say that the more likely strategy to benefit Americans would be to be so well prepared, so well armed, and so well trained that when the fifth phase actually lights up, that we end it quickly. And I mean really quickly. And
agreed. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way we protect this Democratic Republic. It's the only way we ensure security for our children and grandchildren. And it's certainly likely that we're going to have to do that at some point. I'd say the odds are about 90-10 at this point. And so once you understand the insurgency and the George Soros and other leftists that are paying to create this insurgency and kick off a civil war, then you understand kind of where we're headed. And you see governments now, elements of government now standing up against the security elements of other departments of government. This is a very strong indication you're at the end of the fourth phase. So
exactly.
That's the bad news.
And folks, for the phases and the run-up, you can just do a search of our channel. The last couple of times, I believe, Sam's been very, very succinct and very concise in describing the various phases, and some good stuff to go back and listen to. So, Sam, I don't, with all of the calls for violence, for resisting law and order, for resisting ICE, by those who were placed in power through vote, allegedly, I mean, the fair voting, right? No, but through votes. My goodness, I have never seen anything like this, and I know that you're, I mean,
well, I have.
When in history?
I have.
When
okay, in I've seen history? I've seen in America in 2014, Obama tried to set up a situation and kick off a race war in this country. He tried to convince the new Black Panther Party to shoot our security people guarding businesses and apartments with minority families in them. And when that failed, he sent federal snipers to shoot us to make it look like it was a race war between the KKK and the new Black Panther Party. And this was attempted by Obama's Department of Justice and by Valerie Jarrett, who was very close to Obama and calling a lot of the strategic shots. And she even sent a DOJ attorney into the Unified Command meeting in Ferguson and told the Missouri Highway Patrol snipers to shoot my men on the rooftops. Of course, the Highway Patrol declined because I had a relationship with a lot of the snipers on the Highway Patrol. I trained some of them. And they said, no way are we getting in a shooting war with those guys. They're better armed. They have more ammo. And they're more familiar with warfare than we are. Most of them have 4 to 5 tours of duty in the sandbox. And they got suppressed full auto weapons. We're not starting a gunfight with these guys. It's not going to happen. And so that's when they sent the Fed snipers in to try and kick it off. Of course, the counter sniper guys I had on the rooftops, ID'd these guys setting up, and we called it into Unified Command. The Feds hadn't even told St. Louis County Police or the Highway Patrol or anyone in Unified Command that they were setting up to try and shoot our guys and start a shooting war.
Okay, I will give you that, but then if you throw a decade, another decade of attacks on our infrastructure, and by that I mean the courts, the prosecutors, the education system. I mean, add another decade of the pummeling of our once respected institutions now.
Yes.
So now it's exponentially worse, and I know what that word means, exponentially. So, and I think it's used properly in this case. So, okay, so now, yes, that happened, but now we're in a state, I believe, where it's so bad.
Let me ask you a series of questions.
Sure.
If you wanted to create an insurgency and a civil war, would you pay to have prosecutors that would keep bad people in jail, or would you pay to have prosecutors that would let bad people out of jail right away?
The latter, okay. Of course, yeah.
Okay, and if you were trying to create an insurgency, would you import the best and the brightest people from outside our country and encourage them to move here, or would you open the borders and let criminals pour in from every country on earth?
This is,
you go right down the list. It's the playbook of the left trying to destroy America and ultimately create control and population reduction. And exactly. The only one in their way right now, it used to be just the gun owners of America. But now it's the Trump administration, the Trump DOJ, and the gun owners of America. I don't know if you've noticed what Trump's been doing, but he's trying to arm America right now as we speak. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think he knows what's coming.
I agree with you. And if you want to expand on that, that's fine. If not, we can move forward. But folks, you can see what I believe most people can see what President Trump is doing. The little
Pam Bondi just sued the L.A. County Sheriff's Department.
Yeah.
For not processing concealed carry permits and violating people's Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
They filed amicus briefs on behalf of gun owners.
Yeah.
That are being prosecuted around the country. This is unprecedented stuff. No federal government's ever done this.
Which, and you're exactly correct. Looking at it again from a higher view, this is all part, I believe, of the preparation, either verbal warnings or actual preparation being urged by or being implemented by the Trump administration. So you're exactly right on that.
The heart of DOJ on this whole Second Amendment position is, thank goodness, the heartbeat of all of that is Harmy Dillon. She is a brilliant woman with a real heart for natural rights. And she was put in a position in DOJ in a department that is to guard the natural and constitutional rights of American citizens. And she's doing a fantastic job.
Folks, if you don't know that name, and you can research that on your own. But Sam is 100% accurate.
Honestly, okay. I would have picked Harmy Dillon for the Attorney General's office. But Trump picked Pam Bondi because Trump knew Pam and could trust her. I don't think Trump had a great relationship with Harmy Dillon, but there were enough people that did that she got a very high appointment in DOJ.
And thank God for that. And now, by the way, with respect to Pam Bondi, it's interesting because the second up, and I'm trying to remember his name, within the Department of Justice, is the albatross that is stopping a lot of the policy implementation and a lot of the prosecutions and keeping a lot of stuff away from Pam Bondi. This I learned here just within the last week or so. The name escapes me, but it would be the number two guy there. So it's a male, and I don't have the name handy. But go on, sir. Moving on, 20 days ago, we witnessed this horrific event on television, or on you can see the video. It changed. I think it changed a lot of people. I don't know, for the better, some for the worse, but we suddenly saw now a very clear, in my view, a very clear line of division. Those people who are hopelessly, I don't know, insane in, again, this is my own observation, or indoctrinated, where they're cheering the death, the murder of a man, versus those people who are demanding justice. And here we sit 20 days later with this narrative that no one is happy, no one of any reasonable sensibilities is happy with, because it doesn't make any flippin' sense. So with that, sir, I yield to your expertise.
I think I can make some sense of it.
All right.
I've had enough time now to look at a lot more evidence. And, you know, there's a couple of things that really help us when we analyze things like this. But the first thing we have to talk about is the physical evidence must match the narrative. We don't make the laws of physics. Newton described some of them, and Newtonian physics plays a big part in my analysis. But we don't make the laws of physics. Those are absolute things created by God. We just live here. We don't make these rules. Let's go with number one. Physics matters, and they're God's rules, not our rules.
Right.
Our job is trying to understand how they work. And I've devoted most of my life to that endeavor from a physics standpoint. And when you combine that with my research and development on external and terminal ballistics, internal ballistics, the live tissue tests we've done, the number of tests I've done for law enforcement so that they have the right ammo that doesn't over-penetrate and hurt an innocent person, doesn't under-penetrate and get a police officer killed. I've devoted my life to this stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of really good-meaning people on YouTube and X, and they've kind of set themselves up as experts, and they're really not. And I want to tell you, just like a police officer is not an expert in security, a Secret Service agent is an expert in security. Their training is dramatically different. Don't ever confuse the two. In the same sense, an Army Green Beret or a Navy SEAL or a ground branch guy or a special activities center operator, these guys are experts at infiltration and killing humans. They're not external or terminal ballistics experts. Now, do they have a small amount of training in that? If they're a sniper, do they have two or three trajectories memorized? Of course they do. They need that to do their job. But they are not experts in terminal or external ballistics. That's a whole different level of science and math.
And you said it very well. Again, I in my world, being trained in homicide investigation, it's a lot different than, obviously, it's a lot different and more advanced than for example, just being a police officer.
Indeed.
You know, so.
And different than right. A medical examiner, even correct. Though there is some overlap.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Because you're dealing with the same data.
Yeah.
But you're doing different jobs, and there's correct. Different training for those jobs.
Right.
And so I think I'm fairly unique in the U.S. in the sense that I have the engineering, the math, the physics background. I have the external and terminal and internal ballistics R&D background. I have the weapons development background. I had the live tissue test for naval surface warfare in my background. I have 55 years of hunting experience and investigating wounds in mammals. Okay. I've worked for the government as a contractor, shot things other than mammals. So, and I've been able to view a lot of wounds, thousands.
Right.
Not just a couple hundred deer. In Turkey, talking thousands of wounds. And that experience at my age gives me a very unique perspective when you combine it with my understanding of physics, particularly Newtonian physics in this case, and my understanding of terminal ballistics and explosives.
And just so people are aware of this, you are you would be considered an expert in this. And an expert, being labeled an expert, is actually a legal definition.
You have to be certified.
You have to, exactly.
You have to be certified as an expert, for instance, to testify in federal court.
Correct.
In fact, I was certified as a ballistics expert by the federal courts years ago. And it was very unique because I had so damaged the other side's case with my deposition information that they appealed to the Court of Appeals before we ever went to trial to try to have me disqualified as an expert, which I found absolutely hysterical. And so did the attorneys involved and so did the judges involved, because I've developed powdered tungsten bullets for Navy snipers, for Navy operators. The Navy used to buy a 200 grain powdered tungsten sniper weapon system bullet from us. They used to buy 175 grains for their 308s and 87 grain powdered tungsten bullets for their 5.56 weapon systems. The Secret Service used our 200 grain powdered tungsten bullets to guard the president. Now, it was a certain version of the 200 grain bullet that wouldn't, with a 300 wind mag at 50 yards, would not blow through the torso of a 150-pound man, no exit wound, which is an incredible feat technology-wise.
Yeah.
By the way, you can't do that with a lead copper jacket bullet on a 30-06. Okay.
And that's going to come up.
Ask me how I know, right?
Well, I know how. Yeah. And I just want to tell people this too, only for the distinction in analysis from other platforms. Here you have Sam Andrews, who's a certified expert in that. Well, actually, multiple fields relating to
Doug, I've done more R&D on underpenetration and overpenetration of small arms ammunition for Navy special operators, Army special operators, the Secret Service, back when Bill O'Rourke ran the counter sniper detail team for the president. I have done more work on that than any 100 people that you'll ever listen to on YouTube.
Because these are
real problems. See, these are real problems. When you're involved in hostage rescue, you've got to go into an airplane or a room where there's innocent people all over the place, and you've got to pick off three or four guys really quickly. You can't have overpenetration problems. If you're guarding the president from a counter sniper protection detail, presidents draw huge crowds. Mm-hmm. What do you do if the bad guy's in the middle of a crowd? Well, you better pray you spot them. You better pray you've got a round that won't overpenetrate, and you better pray you get the shot off in time. And if you have those three things, you can neutralize the threat and have no collateral damage. And of course, that's always been the goal for our counter sniper protection detail teams. That's always been the goal for anyone involved in counterterrorism work or hostage rescue.
Okay.
And we do a lot more of that than we tell people about.
But again, the difference here, folks, I just want to drive this home. The difference here is that Sam has that certification as an expert, the designation certification as I do, not on the federal, but a state level. That's the difference in this analysis. Okay. So, I just want to drive that point home that you can, is it necessary to have those certifications? I think it helps. Yeah.
It sure helps.
So, okay.
So let's talk about the fundamental issue with Charlie Kirk and the narrative that's out there put out by the FBI. Okay. And the reason I know what I'm about to tell you is because I spent over 16 years of my life working on the engineering of how to prevent an exit wound on a human. Now, we had to go to completely different bullet technology, not even comparable to to a lead bullet with a copper jacket, which is what is almost always shot through a 30-06. Barnes makes some solid copper bullets. They penetrate even worse than lead bullets do. So let's talk about real quickly some of the ranges of influence. What are the slices of the pie? If you're trying to create a situation where a bullet enters a human and it doesn't exit, what are the things we can influence? So if we're talking lead bullets with a copper jacket, we can make the copper jacket thinner. Copper jacket may be on a 30-06, maybe 18 thousandths wall thickness. So you take the 308 diameter of the bullet, you subtract 0.018 times 2, and now you have the diameter of the lead core that goes inside. Now, we can change the amount of antimony that we alloy with the lead. So if you have 1% antimony, you have a very soft lead core, it's more likely to break up, less likely to overpenetrate. You put 3% antimony in it, and it gets much harder and will travel much farther through ballistic gelatin. Okay? Now, you can increase the twist rate. The higher the RPM of the barrel that the barrel creates when it spins the bullet, the more likely the bullet is to frange and not overpenetrate. Okay? So these are some of the things. You can change the design of the tip. You can change the shape of the core and create a tip that's a wedge and causes the bullet to mushroom faster and split. You can change the impact velocity. You can hit bone going in. These are the things that cause more rapid expansion, make it less likely to overpenetrate. These are just a few of the things. Higher the impact velocity, the higher the RPM, the less likely you get overpenetration. The lower the impact velocity, the less RPM, and the more likely you are to penetrate farther and have overpenetration.
How is this applicable?
Sam, so let's talk about the 30-06.
All right.
So I've just given you like eight things that have some range of influence on whether the bullet overpenetrates or not. And let's talk about the range. Okay, we create something to do tests before we go to live tissue tests. We create this thing called calibrated ballistic gelatin. We mix this powder with distilled water, and we get it to a certain temperature for a certain amount of time. We keep it at a certain temperature. Then we shoot it with a 0.177 BB at exactly 400 feet per second. We chrono the BB as it goes into the gelatin. The chronograph is right next to the gelatin, so we get a very accurate impact velocity. And then we have a certain range that the BB has to penetrate. If it's too short, the ballistic gelatin's no good. If it's too long, penetrates too far, it's too soft, it's no good. It has to be right in the range, exactly in the range, to be calibrated ballistic gelatin. Okay? Now, when we shoot a 30-06, we have a range. The most frangible bullet would be a 110 VMAX made by Hornady. And the harder bullets that have the longest penetration in ballistic gelatin would either be a penetrator round, an AP round, or as we step down the scale, a full metal jacket. Step down the scale, Nosler makes a heavy penetrating bullet with an H jacket frame. It has a unique marketing name. And we get into round nose bullets that have soft lead noses and soft cores, and that's closer to the VMAX. But here's what you need to understand. When you shoot calibrated ballistic gelatin with a 30-06, with the shortest penetrating round, a 110 VMAX, where the RPM is almost 300,000 RPM, and the impact velocity is 2,700, 2,800, maybe 3,000 feet a second, depending on your barrel length and the powder loading, the bullet still penetrates 15 inches in ballistic gelatin. You shoot a man in the chest with that bullet, and you blow a hole out the backside of him, three vertebrae tall and the size of a volleyball. Okay? So if you hit a guy in the neck, okay, from the angle that they claim the rooftop shooter was at, it doesn't even hit the spine. It comes right through 4 inches of muscle, leaves a very small hole because it hasn't had time to open up or break up. And 30-06 bullet, 150 grain soft point, will go through three human necks the size of Charlie Kirk's and still overpenetrate the third neck. The range of normal ammunition for the 30-06 penetration and calibrated gelatin varies between 18 to 19 inches and 29 to 35 inches, depending on the barrel twist rate, the length of the barrel, the impact velocity, but that's the range. 18 to 19 is the shortest amount of penetration that you could possibly get on muscle tissue with a 30-06. Now, because the guy was inside 200 yards, clearly the impact velocity is going to be quite high. Bullets typically degrade less than 150 feet per second per 100 yards.
All right.
So if that bullet started at 2,900 feet per second, it hit him at well over 2,600 feet per second.
I agree. Yeah.
So the idea that the FBI's narrative, and there's some smart people, I just want to say that there's some smart people, there's some pathologists, there's some Green Berets, there's some Navy SEALs, and they're all talking about this. None of them are ballistic experts. I heard a Green Beret, I think he's on Valhalla something is the name of his channel on YouTube. And I listened to him. He did like a 3-hour program yesterday. And I listened to most of it. And those guys are so far off base. The Green Beret has a pretty good understanding of explosives. He has a really basic, rudimentary, almost first grade, kindergarten level of external and terminal ballistics. And obviously they're challenged by some of the math.
And that, again, folks, this is why I say, stay in your lane.
Yeah, it really helps to stay in your lane.
Right.
Even if you're a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret, because you're not an expert in external or terminal ballistics. And so you saw this pathologist put out something with some diagrams with a protractor on it. And I gave that to Eric early this afternoon, hoping he might be able to post that so we could talk about it.
All right.
Well, he superimposes this protractor on the overhead scene of the college campus where Kirk was assassinated. And he claims that the shooter is 9 to 10 degrees off, straight on. So based on where the hole is in the neck, he shows the line, and I think Eric's got this up now.
Yes, he does.
See what I'm talking about. Yep. And he makes a claim that even at 10 degrees, they barely even nick bone. So we're going through arteries, jugular veins, and neck muscle, which has no prayer of stopping a 30-06. None. Even if it hits the neck bone, it's going to blow the vertebrae out the backside of the guy's neck and leave a massive hole. And a lot of that hole is made from the bone fragments being accelerated over 2,000 feet a second as they blow out the backside of a neck. Ask me how I know. All right, now.
Before you move on, one question.
Well, I want to hit this angle.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead. Continue then.
Okay. So this guy claims 10 degrees. Now, let's talk math. Let's talk a little trig angular measurement. Okay. Let's be realistic. What does a 1 degree angle open up to at 100 yards? The answer is roughly 62.8 inches, a little more than 62.8. Okay. That's 1 degree. That's a 1 degree angle at 100 yards. So if you go to 150 yards, now you're around 94 inches. You're close to 8 feet. Now he's claiming 10 degrees from side angle and 10 degrees of elevation angle from being on top of the building. There's no building out there that's 80 feet taller than Charlie Kirk's position. I mean, it's more like 4.5 or 5 degrees on the down angle. And it's more like 3 degrees to 4 degrees on the angle from the side. How far off the center line of 12 o'clock? Now, if you measure this with Google Earth, where they claim the shooting position was, draw the center line that Charlie Kirk was facing, you're going to see what I'm saying is absolutely the truth. These people are quite challenged in trigonometry or angular measurement. And they're making a lot of assumptions based on these huge errors. So the first thing we have to do is we got to get the math right. We got to get the angles right. By the way, before we get into further into this, I want to say that there's a really high probability that an autopsy was done on Charlie Kirk. There's a real high probability. One, because it's required by law. And two, I've never seen it not happen in my entire life. It would be the most unprecedented thing in history in the last 70 years. Because when there's a murder, there's an autopsy. Okay, now, yep, was it done at the hospital by the doctor? Did he fill out the report? Was it done by an ME at the county facility? I don't know. But I'm just saying the probability of there being no autopsy is about zero. It's close to zero. Now, will they make it public? Who knows? We should demand that they make it public. Okay. Now, let's talk about the Newtonian physics side of this. Okay. I want everybody that's listening to put their left palm in front of them, palm up, with their arm bent about 90 degrees. Now, relax your fingers. Take your thumb and squeeze the tendons about 2 inches behind your wrist and watch what happens to your fingers. That's the physical connection. Okay. So one of the strongest clues we have to where did the shot come from is what was the very first movement of Charlie's body parts at impact. And I will try to mimic this for you on camera. Do you guys see this as the left side of my neck or the right side?
Left side.
Left side of my neck. Not your left, but my left, correct?
That's your...
Is this my right? You, is this my right or your left?
As I look at you, it appears that you are pointing to the left side of your neck. However...
Okay.
Or wait a minute, Eric the Tech, help me out here. What's wrong with me?
What are the people seeing?
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll go here. Okay.
All right.
The people see me now pointing to the left side of my neck.
Correct.
So there are very strong tendons and muscles here that hold the neck in position because the vertebrae in the back become a hinge. And they allow the head to move independent of the lower body. Okay? Now, if I were standing up straight, and this was my torso, and this was my lower body, and someone was horizontal like Superman and tackled me, my hips would go the direction of the energy, but my torso would come towards the opposite direction because of the hinging effect of my waist and my hip bones. Okay, now think about that. A bullet comes down and impacts from the front. Shot FBI narrative, quote unquote. The first thing that's going to happen is this area that the bullet hit is going to be pushed rearward, destroyed, and cause tension above and below the impact zone, which is going to pull my chin down. Okay. But if the bullet shot from a 45-degree angle to this location, the first move of my head is going to be down and towards the energy of the bullet, the vector of, that the bullet came in on. That's exactly what Charlie Kirk's head did. It went down and towards the trajectory of the bullet. That initial move, along with the overpressure of the shirt in a 360-degree environment, tells us where the shot came from. It also gives us some very strong clues to the angle of entry. So if Eric can post the picture of the rights from the right side with the back of the shirt puffed out and a tuft of hair sticking out the backside for one frame on that video.
Yes.
If he could show us that freeze frame, we'll talk about it.
I have looked at that, by the way, folks. And
so if you look at the shirt being puffed out in almost a shallow triangle, I can tell you by synchronizing the videos that the shirt is puffed out all the way around 360 degrees. So this completely defeats the explosive microphone theory. Because the only way for this to happen is Charlie would have had to swallow the explosive before it detonated. And it would have had to have been right near the center of his throat.
Right.
That's the only way this happens. Because when you shoot something, particularly ballistic gelatin or human flesh, what you see is overpressure that goes out in a circle anywhere it doesn't have resistance. And you can see the skin stretch out almost to his chin before it snaps back. And you can see the neck puff out. And you can see the chest rise out and the back expand. And this is very typical of a high velocity round that's very, very frangible. Okay, has a lot of RPM, not a lot of mass, and breaks up fairly quickly. Now, when you combine that with the fact that his chin and head went down and to the left, he's basically nodding towards where the shot came from. This is Newtonian physics, and anyone that disputes that needs to educate themselves. They don't understand the way the body works. You have less mass here. You have much more mass below and much more mass above. The neck on Charlie Kirk probably doesn't weigh 2 pounds. His head probably weighs 13 pounds. And his body probably weighs well over 200 pounds. So anything that's above the impact point on a hinge or below the impact point on a hinge is going to move a certain way when a high velocity round hits the control ropes, just like the tendons on your forearm that I had you squeeze. Okay. And so these tendons and muscles and the carotid artery got hit and the head points at the shooter.
So, because
of physics.
Okay. So you are reversing, if I'm correct on this, you're taking this frame, we'll call this Exhibit A, and using this to determine trajectory, which will determine...
Well, not this particular frame, but this particular frame is to show the overpressure that was in the back. Okay. And I want to talk about the hair.
Okay.
Look at the hairline. Because on this video, there's overpressure inside the upper chest and the neck, all at the same time. And I believe a fragment, maybe in a very small hole, maybe jacket, or a very, very small piece of lead, pierced his skin in the back and allowed that pressure to push the shirt and frame it like that. Okay, but here's the end. How do I know it's pressure, not the necklace? Very simply, you see the hair flip up and flip back down. The hair on the back of his head, the back of his head was smooth before the impact. Once the overpressure showed up and blew the shirt out away from the body, air came up. The shirt directed air overpressure up the back of his neck and took a significant amount of his air and flipped it up and let it flip back down.
Right.
So that tells me that the bullet entered his chest cavity and the pressure wave, the overpressure, was in the upper part of his chest cavity, which means that this is actually an entrance hole. There's no other explanation. This has to be an entrance hole, and it had to come in at a significant down angle to break up into the chest cavity, cause the overpressure in the back, the hair to move, and the shirt to blow away in the front.
So, okay, and I maybe I misheard you. The chest would be an exit wound, correct?
Or you almost, said entrance almost wound. Microscopic. Probably can't even find it. So let's talk about the alternative theory.
All right.
Based on the evidence, when I initially looked at that picture from the side that Eric just had up, there's a very interesting characteristic when you shoot ballistic gelatin. The ballistic gelatin, like if you've got a 10 by 10 inch block that's 36 inches long, the ballistic gelatin stretches to 18 inches and snaps back. You need almost 30,000 frames a second to video it. But if you look online and look for ballistic gelatin tests, you'll see the overpressure and the snapback.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing. Once the overpressure reaches its peak, hot gas comes out the entrance hole. And you can see the smoke coming out of the front of the ballistic gelatin. And I've seen it 1,000 times. I've done so many tests. The smoke comes out the entrance hole. The overpressure gets vented out the entrance hole. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Which is really interesting. Now, part of that's because the heat of the bullet vaporizes some of the gel. And there's water in the gel. So you see smoke, not smoke as in burnt powder smoke, but you see steam because the gelatin has a significant amount of H2O in it. And so
much like the human body, hence yes, the use of that gel. I got
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So if you look at this, the picture we just looked at, it almost looked like the bullet entered near the center of his back and the overpressure was coming back out the hole to deform the shirt in that little point. That's about 3 inches, 4 inches below his collar. How do I know that's not the case? Because of the way the body moves at impact. The other physical evidence doesn't jive with that theory. Charlie was not shot in the back.
Correct.
Charlie was shot in the neck from a more severe angle than that position on the roof, a higher angle, and that bullet franged and came apart and created a bunch of overpressure, and probably a tiny piece of jacket pierced his skin and let the overpressure blow on that shirt, which got deflected up to his hair, which blew his hair up in the air. That's exactly what happened. I promise
All right.
you.
All right.
There's no other theory that jives with all of the physical evidence we have.
That's a very important point, folks. You have to look at all of it, not just one, aspect. And I suspect 30 frames per second is what we're looking at, and, yes, and that's what you're using to be. Okay,
26 to 30, depending on the phone.
All right. Go ahead.
So we don't have all the evidence we want. And by the way, these people that say they filmed a bullet in the air with their cell phone, let me tell you, the guy at Butler that filmed the 5.56 bullet blowing past Trump's ear after it had just passed Trump, his setting was 8,000 frames a second, not 36 frames a second. And the bullet was still 10 inches long. It was a streak. It wasn't a bullet frozen in place. You need almost 25 to 30,000 frames a second on a rifle bullet to really kind of stop it in place and make it look like a bullet rather than a streak. A rifle bullet going by a cell phone camera is like a 96 foot streak. It's really long.
Yeah.
It's not what they're claiming.
And believe me, with respect to Butler, you're 100% accurate on the setting. The questions, obviously, there. Why? Okay, now I know. I know some very respected people I respect have offered their opinions.
On why Charlie was assassinated?
No, on with respect to Butler, why that photographer had those settings on his camera.
A very bright sunny day, and he was set on multiple frames.
Correct. Yes.
And that's an interesting question. But it was to his credit, it was a very bright sunny day, and the sun was to his back, shining directly on Trump's face, and the wind was blowing 15 miles an hour in Trump's face if he was facing straight out, not turned to the right like he was when he was shot at. Yep. And so, you know, if you understand the conditions and you understand the wind, you could see why he'd bump the frame rate up, the shutter speed up is the proper way to say that.
Again, that whole, just that one question took us probably a good part of a day to assess that. But continue on with the Charlie Kirk matter.
Okay, so let's talk about a .30-06 for a minute. Typically, they have a 1 in 10 twist, maybe a 1 in 11, maybe a 1 in 12. What that means is the helix of the rifling makes a complete twist in 10 inches. We call that one complete rotation of the rifling makes it a 1 in 10. One complete turn in 11 inches makes it a 1 in 11. So a 1 in 11 is a slower twist rate than a 1 in 10. Now, the higher the twist rate, the more likely the bullet is to franch. I can promise you that a Mauser didn't have some kind of special high twist rate. Okay, not going to happen. All right. Now, how do you, with no powdered tungsten core bullet technology, because I know how to do it with powdered tungsten, it's easy, but how do you do it with a lead bullet out of a 30-06? How do you get the bullet to stop, frange, and not over-penetrate? The simple answer is you can't. If you shot a man in the neck 1,000 times with a 30-06 bullet, you would have an exit wound 1,000 times out of 1,000. You are 10 standard deviations to the right. I mean, there is no chance. The chance of that happening is slim and none and slim left town.
Right.
Okay, so let's not even pretend like the FBI narrative is even plausible. Now, if you say that guy was three stories up on a building, okay, let's say he was 36 feet up, and there's an extra 10 feet because of the grade, the stair stepping of the terrain. So give him 40 feet. I mean, or give him 45, give him 50 feet. What's 50 feet divided by 8? Right? I mean, 50 divided by 8 tells you the degrees angle of the shot, the inclination, what we call as snipers, the inclination angle of the shot. 50 divided by 8 is a rough estimate of the actual angle. Okay? So 8 times 8 is 64, right?
6.
So it's under 7 degrees.
Right.
It's clearly under 7 degrees.
6 and not, change, yeah.
Yeah, not 10 degrees. Now, you look at the position that they mark the evidence of the guy's position on the roof, that's not even 4 degrees, 3 degrees from dead center. So if the bullet enters here, it's going almost straight. What is, if you trig out 3 degrees over 5, 6 inches, what do you get? You don't get hardly any measurable movement to the center in that short of a distance on 3 degrees. What do you get? 35 thousandths of an inch?
Not much.
So
yeah.
If it hit here, it's gonna over penetrate to the same side of his spine. It's not hitting any bone at all. It's hitting muscle, tendon, arteries, and veins.
All right.
Okay. So there's nothing to stop a 30-06 bullet.
All right.
So it begs the question. How do you shoot Charlie Kirk in the neck right here, get overpressure in the chest and overpressure in the neck in the same instant? And the only way to do it is to get that bullet into the chest cavity, which means it has to be at a significant down angle, not 10 degrees, not 7 degrees, something closer to 15 to 20 degrees. And also, the bullet has to have a significant RPM to it. If it's a lead copper bullet, which I'm sure it is, I don't think they pulled tungsten out of the guy. If they did, we got a whole nother problem, because there's very few people that have access to that technology. Okay. So we got a big problem there. But the bottom line is it's about a 99.999% chance it was a standard bullet with a lead core and a copper jacket. Now, how would you do that? Well, first off, you wouldn't use a big caliber like a 30-06. You wouldn't use anything with a lot of mass to it. You would use like an FN 5.7 round or possibly 110 grain VMAX and a 300 blackout, or maybe a 40 to 50 grain VMAX in a 5.56 with a super fast twist rate barrel. Then you guarantee, and I hate to give away, you know, technology that our assassins use, but if you don't want to be caught, you use a super fast twist rate with a super frangible bullet, and enough impact velocity to make sure that the ME has nothing to match to a barrel. They get powder. They get tiny specks of lead and tiny specks of copper jacket because the thing went in at 310,000 RPM and it grenaded.
Yeah.
Basically on impact. So now you have all these small particles with no mass, so you don't get any overpenetration. Bullet stays inside, creates the hydraulic shockwave, the overpressure, 360 degrees. The shirt moves front and back all at the same time. Okay. And of course, the head gives a quick nod to the direction on a neck shot. That's just what happens. Anybody that's ever neck shot a doe in deer season knows exactly what I'm talking about. And so it's the troubling thing for me is that there were people there to create diversions. And there is a governor candidate, gubernatorial candidate for that state that's running around saying he was to the east and a shot was so near him. It was so close. Right? Now, where's the muzzle blast of a .30-06? It's not on any of the sound recordings. You hear the impact of Charlie and the crack of a supersonic bullet. And that's about it. Okay. So that sounds like a suppressed weapon. That sounds like a weapon with a very small. And see, when we train people, we put them behind a berm at 300. We put them behind our berm at 600 in a safe place. And we shoot handguns. We shoot AK-47s. We shoot 5.56s. We shoot 308 sniper rifles. We shoot 30-06s. We shoot 338 Lapuas. Occasionally we'll shoot a 30 Wolf. We always shoot a 50 cal over their heads for two reasons. We want them through volume, pitch, and timing to have some sense of what someone is shooting at you with. Because people that haven't been in a gunfight, they have no idea. They hear a crack. It sounds like a firecracker. It doesn't sound like a gunshot to them. And then 0.3 seconds later, if it's a supersonic rifle with no suppressor, they hear a boom. And that's called a muzzle blast. In the sniper world, we call it crack boom. And the difference in timing between a crack and a boom gives you an approximation of the shooter's range, how far away they are. Now, with a 9mm round flying over your head 300 yards, you don't get a crack because the bullet's decelerated enough to be below the speed of sound, so it doesn't create a supersonic crack. It sounds like when it goes by, it sounds like a duck, a really fast duck flying by a duck blind, and you hear the wind coming off their wings. That's exactly what it sounds like. And you hear the boom of the handgun almost the same exact instant that you hear the whirring sound. So sometimes it's hard to distinguish. Now, with a 5.56, you're going to hear the crack and they're going to hear the boom. But how do you tell the difference between a 5.56 and a 30-06? The pitch is different. The 30-06 has a smaller muzzle. It has a lot less powder. And it has a significantly higher pitched muzzle blast. The crack is also quieter. So when you hear that supersonic crack come in, and then you hear, pow, that's a smaller caliber weapon. When a 50 cal flies over your head, and that's happened to me, or a 12.7 HMG, which is like the Russian equivalent of a 50 cal, you hear a massively louder crack. It's like having somebody blow up a little firecracker next to you. That's the .223, and the 50 cal flying by your head. It sounds more like an M80 or a quarter stick of dynamite. I mean, it is loud.
Right.
It hurts your ears. If you don't have hearing protection on and a 50 cal flies 10 feet over your head, the crack is so loud it is painful. Once again, the pitch is different.
Okay.
The muzzle blast of the 50 cal is much lower and much deeper. And so there's these three elements that we can analyze, both the pitch and the timing of the crack and the boom and the impact on Charlie's body. We can hear the slap of the bullet that give us clues as to what type of weapon was shot at Charlie. And I can tell you from that information that I've now had the chance to analyze that I believe it was a fairly low energy rifle that was probably under 2,000 foot-pounds of energy, probably two-thirds of what a .30-06 is, maybe less. And the possible bullets would be something like a 6.5 Grendel with a 90-grain frangible bullet, or a 300 Blackout suppressed with a 110 VMAX bullet shot at supersonic speed, or possibly a 5.56 with a 40 to 55 grain VMAX. There are a number of weapons that ballistically would match the physical evidence, but they're small, they're relatively fast. We're not talking handgun speeds, we're not talking subsonic speeds. We've got a supersonic crack on every video I've listened to.
So what does that portend? What does that suggest?
It was a rifle.
Okay. It wasn't probably a rifle. It wasn't the .30-06. It was
definitely wasn't a .30-06 because you know the muzzle blast of an unsuppressed .30-06. They didn't find a Mauser with a suppressor on it. They found a Mauser with a short barrel chambered in .30-06. That would have given a muzzle blast that would have just startled the living daylights out of everybody.
Right.
See, everybody that heard the shot, they're not describing the muzzle blast of a .30-06. What I think people are describing is the actual supersonic crack of the bullet as it flew by their position. I don't hear anybody talking about significant muzzle blast. Okay. And you know what? This guy's saying, oh, the shot came from the east. Well, Charlie was facing predominantly north. I believe, based on the evidence, that the shot had to come from the west.
All right.
Where Charlie's facing is dead on 12 o'clock, I'd say you got to be somewhere between 10:30 and 9:30 on that shot.
All right.
And you've got to be between 15 and 25 degrees at down angle. Now, we're going to have to go visit the campus to see if that shot, if there's positions that could have been taken, you know, that have a little more. So a taller building would have had to been closer to Charlie to get that kind of a down angle. And I believe those buildings are there. And I believe that the crack boom evidence that we have identifies a suppressed rifle from inside 85 yards. And all of that negates what the FBI is trying to tell everybody. Not even in the same zip code. The physical evidence isn't even in the same zip code of what the FBI is trying to lie to everybody about.
Okay. Now, obviously, many questions arise from this scenario. Obviously, if we have one narrative, that's the official line from the FBI, which, hey, folks, from the, you know, alleged pipe bombs, on January 6th, their behavior obviously doesn't warrant our trust, even with the new leadership. So, all right.
Let me ask you this question, Doug.
Go on.
What's the only agency that we know of that wanted to end Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA?
What's the only agency?
Yeah, it's FBI. Arctic Frost.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
You know, that's the only agency we know of. And here's the other thing that to me makes some rogue group in the FBI very interesting. What happened at Butler? The FBI went in and scrubbed things in less than like 18 hours.
Yeah.
They scrubbed the scene. What did they do at Waco? They brought in 48 semi-truck loads of gravel, bulldozed the place, and made a gravel parking lot out of it in less than 48 hours. The head of the Texas Rangers said it was the biggest destruction of a crime scene he'd ever witnessed in his 35 years in law enforcement. That was sworn testimony by the head of the Texas Rangers before the Senate of the United States.
There you go.
So who does dirty deeds and covers them up in less than 2 days? I mean, completely destroys the crime scene. Who gets away with that? There's only one agency in the U.S. that's ever gotten away with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it only the FBI?
Well, the CIA, you know, if you're talking about Grand Branch or Special Activities Center, these guys, they don't generally operate in the U.S. That's not their prerogative. And almost every rendition in the United States in the last 40, 50 years has been handled by FBI HRT. That's the truth.
Okay. All right. Let's go with that then at this moment in time. So now you've got Kash Patel. And again, here are my questions. So yeah, the folks, if you understand or cross, I mean, look, I get that, but you have different. You've got Kash Patel, who actually visited the scene.
Yeah, he flew out there because the FBI wasn't doing their job right. And him and Bongino flew out there immediately because they weren't getting the answers or the procedures or the things they expected. Now, it took them hours to get out there.
Which they could change a whole hell of a lot in that amount of time. I mean,
look at the scene was contaminated within 8 minutes.
Well, true.
The whole scene was trampled, destroyed, and why isn't Turning Point making public the videos? And you know, let's talk about Turning Point.
Go ahead.
You know, Charlie did a 180 on Israel. And I'm just telling you, he did. You can argue that. You can do whatever you want. But the truth's going to come out.
Yep.
Charlie created a Doge group within Turning Point USA about 5 days before he was killed. Okay?
Yep.
Charlie did a number of things because there were Israeli donors and Middle Eastern donors that nobody was giving him answers on. Like, why are we taking this money? Who is this money coming from? And by the way, how is all this money disappearing from Turning Point USA? So I want to know who we're taking money from, and I want to know who we're giving it to. I want answers. So he put together a team of five people inside Turning Point USA and said, investigate this. 4.5 days later, he's dead. And before his body's even buried, his replacement has been appointed. I find that fascinating. I've never seen anything like it. When you're running a $40 million organization and you've got to pick a replacement, guys, that's done very carefully, usually by a board of advisors.
Yes.
And there's a lot of deliberation and a lot of discussion back and forth on the strengths and weaknesses of the potential candidates. That doesn't happen in the middle of a grieving process in 3 days, does
it? Not usual. No, and what astounded me was the amount of money, because I had no clue. My goodness, amount of money that we're.
I don't want anybody to take this as a condemnation of Erica Kirk.
No.
I believe Erica Kirk is being played right now. I believe she's been played. Okay? And I want to believe that, even though I don't want to get into it. But for now, I think that we better start looking at the money. Where was it coming from? Where was it going? And the other question I have is why is Candace Owens the only human being out there demanding a deeper investigation of the assassination of Charlie Kirk.
Man, I'm glad you brought that up.
The only friend of Charlie Kirk's that is demanding a deeper investigation. The people that work with Charlie Kirk, like Candace wasn't working with, she's still friends. Still talk to him very often.
And by the way, notice how that's been debated. Oh, they never met, or they weren't friends. And boy, I cannot believe what's going on in the back end of all of that. But you raise a very look. Think what you want about Candace. Okay, I don't care, but just to be pummeled for asking the question.
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
And the only one, the only person that Charlie was reasonably close to, and he had a lot of friends. He had guy friends in Turning Point USA. He promoted the guys that he trusted that were his friends, that were close to him. I've never seen friends so happy after the assassination of one of their best friends and their boss. I've never seen anything like it. The non-vocal cues I'm reading off some of these TPUSA people is remarkable. And it's just absolutely fascinating that within days they had this whole machine set up to raise more money, take in more money, create all this other content. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating that that's where we're at. And you know what? What you're going to find out very quickly is after Kirk's assassination, was the Doge team inside TPUSA, was it neutralized? That's going to tell you everything. Because if the Doge team wasn't neutralized and they uncover this corruption that Charlie wanted to uncover and wanted to come out, Charlie liked the truth. That's what made him so special. He cared about the truth. He understood what was in the Gospel of John in chapter 8.
I agree.
And he believed it.
Well, what do you make, because we got about 13, 14 minutes left. What do you make of whether a security team or people around him removing the SD cards from the cameras right away? Some say it was to avoid confiscation by the feds. Okay. Others provide other reasons, but it did.
Why wouldn't you provide a copy to the feds? Keep the original and provide a copy to the feds. You give it to your lawyer, and the lawyer makes a copy. It's got to come out anyway. It can be subpoenaed.
Well, right.
I mean, there's no reason not to give a copy to the feds. If you wanted Charlie Kirk's killer found, you would have taken them you wouldn't have used the chair Charlie was sitting in because you're screwing up a crime scene. You're contaminating a crime scene. But you would have taken those cameras and that data, and you would have given it to your attorney, and you would have had him make a copy and give it to the FBI ASAP.
Right.
Because the 100%. Longer you wait, the bigger chance this killer has of getting away. And when they did that, they didn't know who the shooter was. There was no narrative out there then.
Well, at least that's, I'll just say this, that's the presumption that we're all operating on. Okay, so I'll put a period there. Now, what could possibly be, for example,
there's only three suspects in this deal.
Go on.
It's somebody working for an Israeli operation. It's the FBI, or it's the people inside TPUSA that were worried about the money and Charlie refusing to take these huge sums of money from Israel. There's only three suspects.
And I'm sure you've been in the position. I have refused money, 100% refused money, because with that came very bad strings. So the suspect pool, I suppose, is smaller. Whoever the actor, nefarious actor might be, actors plural, did they anticipate the reaction, the growth, or
the that's one of the reasons I don't think it was a leftist like George Soros who paid for a hit, because George Soros would have been smart enough. His son even would be smart enough to go, you know, we don't want to make a martyr out of this guy. They'll have groups in every high school and college in America.
Right.
If we execute this guy on public television. You know, I don't see how it benefits Soros's agenda. You know, if he honestly thought that would help him, he's a lot dumber than I think. And he's been relatively crafty.
And I don't think that's the case either. So, okay. So you're looking. Okay.
Who benefits when Charlie dies? That's a simple question. Who benefits the most? Who stands to gain the most?
Based on the reaction and the action of the grassroots people who benefits from the death, in this case, I don't want to sound ghoulish, but obviously, if it was their intent to exterminate the grassroots effort,
the movement.
Right, then that backfired tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
So if they didn't anticipate that, I can't imagine anyway.
Well, let me ask you this question, Doug. Who has a long and glorious history of attacking people that support Donald Trump?
Gee, hang on a second.
General Flynn? Ring any bells?
Yeah.
Petraeus?
Yeah.
Flynn? Lois Lerner? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. We can go on. Yeah.
And who botched the investigation and who's trying to cram a bunch of garbage down our throat?
But how does. How is this. Okay. So we've had time, 20 days. Okay. In this case, you've had time to craft a false narrative. However, how can that possibly stand? Is it possible that Patel, Bongino et al. Could be could be lied to so deeply that they believe it?
All I gotta say is, Kash Patel, brother, you better get a hard look at that autopsy and look at the entrance wound, the bullet path. And you better make sure that that Emmy pulled every fragment that never exited Charlie's body out of his body and weighed it.
That'd because be next
if
rate,
you don't come up easy. With 150, 180 grains of lead and copper jacket, you got a big problem on your hands, brother.
Yeah, I agree. However, autopsy, depending on who's doing the autopsy, you can actually, you could munge the autopsy. All right.
You can lie on an autopsy.
Right.
Did you see the guy that became the head of the hospital?
No.
That they took him to? Well, first off, they took him to a hospital that was farther away and was lower rated in trauma capabilities.
Which I knew that.
Is really sketchy. And the guy that took over the hospital took over literally, I think, on the 10th of September.
Yeah, and I don't believe in coincidences. Stuff. Yeah, look, I don't believe in coincidences at all. So, all right, and I think this was planned out. To me, this was it didn't need a lot of lead time. I think it was a sufficient lead time. You're looking at what all you need is a few days, probably, in my view. But however, the objective was a lot longer than that, but the lead time for this operation really only required, what, a couple of days, you think?
Well, how many times has Charlie Kirk been at an event outdoors where you had rooftops for 180 degrees that you had to defend? And how many times have you seen someone get shot and everybody that's talking that's not neutral, that has some kind of sketchy past or sketchy background or an axe to grind, is pointing away. The shot came from somewhere completely different than where the physical evidence points.
Now,
this is the part that bothers me.
Could the echo created by that cavern or that valley, could that enter into the picture at all?
It could.
Okay.
I mean, it could confuse some people. It wouldn't confuse a normal person, to someone with some training. You know, I gave Eric a recording, a video of a witness talking about, they were literally up front, just right of center, And she describes the bullet coming from the shot coming from her right. Now, if she's facing Charlie Kirk, where they said they were, and we can verify this, there's enough video out there
right.
that she's where she is, and I did that, then the bullet obviously came from the west. Because that's her right.
Right, correct.
And she's hearing that supersonic crack coming from the west. She said she looked to her right, or she saw her right. I wish Eric would play that video.
Yeah,
so people understand the witness.
Folks, please hang with us. Even if this extends beyond the allotted time, we will lose a couple of audio platforms, I believe. But let's go ahead and run this, Eric.
I knew immediately because I was looking at Charlie when he was speaking and I heard the shot from my right and just saw immediately him fall back. And I froze. I actually didn't get down. He actually pushed me down and said, get down, get down. And my phone.
Okay.
There you go.
So there's a gal who was facing Kirk, looking at him and heard the shot to her right. Well, that agrees with all the physical evidence. Her testimony corroborates what I'm saying. And everybody else, all these other experts saying he got shot in the head. Let me tell you something. I heard a supersonic crack. You put a supersonic round in the skull of a human and their eyeballs move out. The top of their head blows off. I'm just telling you, it's not a pretty sight. Charlie Kirk did not take a supersonic round to the head.
That I agree with. At least I can comment there on my expert from everything. And I've seen several. I mean, well, more than my share. Yeah.
By looking at the physical evidence from 360 degrees that we now have, which I didn't have the last time I spoke to you.
Right.
I think it was the night it happened. I think last time I was with you was on the
yeah, 10th. And at that time, you were, if memory serves me, you were saying that looks like it ricocheted off of the plate.
But he wasn't wearing any body.
He was not wearing a plate. That's correct.
Yeah, there was nothing to ricochet off.
Right.
I'm thinking, how could a shot have come from that rooftop and wound up a chunk of it exiting his neck? And it would have had to ricochet off to change the angle slightly. And, you know, the only thing that changes bullets' angles more than slightly are things like A550 hexalloy plate, you know. And if you hit it too much straight on, it just franges the bullet into multiple pieces. But it's an interesting thing. Now that I have all this evidence to look at, I've been able to systematically eliminate the exploding device. Let me tell you something. If there had been an explosion under his shirt that would have been strong enough to kill him and cut his carotid, it would have blown his shirt to smithereens, and that microphone would have landed on a roof somewhere. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
But plus, I mean, there's a lot of other evidence that would appear. So to me, that was never a viable theory, nor was a cell phone gun. No. I understand people, you know, are looking, trying to really look for answers on this. But I think what you said, your analysis is more is consistent with what my limited training, but more expansive training in homicide investigations does. It's consistent with that. So, okay. So.
Well, where was the burnt flesh on his skin from the heat of the explosion? You know, I mean, there's just so many things right. that just completely refute an exploding microphone theory. And the overpressure in a 360 degree at the same instant in time.
Correct.
That's a supersonic bullet entering the chest cavity and fragmenting.
Right. Okay.
I mean, it just that's it. Now the question.